This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. This program marks the anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, featuring two writers, Vietnam novelist and poet Nguyen Phan Quy Mai. And she will speak to us from Vietnam. And Wayne Carlin, who's in nearby Maryland. There is no better way to meet people than to hear their voices. So we're going to ask a poem for each one. And Quy Mai, would you open with a poem and tell us what book it's from?
Thank you so much, Grace, for having us on the program. I love the Library of Congress. It's one of the most beautiful libraries in the world. I've been there and I like to be there in person again and to see you again. So it's magical that we have this program together. So I'm going to read from my poetry collection, The Secret of Hoa Sen. And maybe I could, because, you know, we have Wayne, a dear friend of mine on the program today. So I like to read a poem which I wrote about American veterans. So I was born and I grew up in Vietnam, and I grew up being told that I should consider American soldiers as the enemy. I was told to be fearful of them because of the many things that I learned at school about the cruelty of war and of soldiers who tried to kill us. But you know, during my years of reading American literature, especially literature written by American veterans, I felt that, you know, everyone went to war, and if they survived, they could lose something, which is such a big part of them. And the Vietnamese poet Nguyễn Duy wrote, "Nói cho cùng, trong mỗi cuộc chiến tranh, phe nào thắng thì nhân dân đều bại. In the end of each and every war, whoever wins, the people always lose." I feel like, you know, both American people and Vietnamese people lost in the Vietnam War. And through my years of working with American veterans, I've learned so much about myself, about humanity of both sides, and the need for us to come together to help each other heal. And this poem was written when I was in Hanoi, sitting with someone whom I once considered the enemy. So maybe I read it in Vietnamese first and then in English. Với một cựu binh Mỹ, chúng tôi ngồi đối diện với nhau, màn xương hận thù được thay bằng làn khói phở bốc hơi nghi ngút. Ông nhễ nhại trong trời nóng bức như một người Việt thành thạo nâng đũa lên. Chiến tranh chưa bao giờ bị bỏ quên, chiến tranh chưa bao giờ chấm dứt. Hàng đêm ông vẫn phải sống sót những giấc mơ. Ông lặng im, tiếng còi xe bốn bề nổi sóng, chồng trành giữa chúng tôi giữa hiện tại và dĩ vãng. Ông chẳng thể giải thích lý do của cuộc chiến, vì sao người thân tôi ngã xuống, vì sao bao trẻ thơ vẫn bị cầm tù trong nỗi đau chất độc da cam. Nếu ông kể thì tôi cũng chẳng chạm được vào màu trắng của những đám tang đã ghi dấu trên tóc ông, đã tạc vào đôi mắt ông, đang dìm tôi xuống chiếc phễu khổng lồ không đáy. Trên màn hình TV, một cuộc chiến tranh đang sống dậy. Cách chúng tôi một gang tay, cái chết đang há miệng, ngoạm lấy, nuốt chửng từng số phận. Cách chúng tôi chỉ một gang tay. Cách chúng tôi chỉ một gang tay. With a Vietnam veteran, we sit opposite each other, a dewy curtain of hatred, replaced by the smoke screen of two steaming bowls of pho noodle soup. He sweats like a Vietnamese in the tropical heat. Like a Vietnamese, he raises his chopsticks. The war has never stopped. He has never forgotten about the war. And each night he must survive his own dreams. He stays quiet, traffic noise making waves from all four sides, rocking us between present and the past. He can't explain the reasons for the war, the reasons why my relatives had to fall, and why so many children are imprisoned in the pain of Agent Orange. If he told me, I would not be able to touch the funeral whiteness that has bleached his hair and carved into his features, sinking me deep into a bottomless, twirling tunnel. On a nearby TV screen, another war is alive. Only an arm span away from us, death is opening its mouth, snatching and gobbling down lives. Only an arm span away from us, only an arm span away.
Oh, that is so beautiful. That is just so very beautiful. Thank you. Wayne, read us an opening poem from your forthcoming book.
This is a poem also about reconciliation, and I wrote it after meeting some Vietnamese who had, the first time I had met Vietnamese who had been on the other side of the war. And one of them was a woman who had been on the Ho Chi Minh trails, cleaning up the bombing and the strafing after we had been over there. And she was a teenager at the time, and I met her. She'd already become a writer and a poet. And when I met her in Boston, I had flown over areas where she had been on the trail. And if I had seen her at that time, I would have killed her. And if she'd seen me at that time in my helicopter and I'd gone down in flames, she would have been happy. So the poem is called Mirror, and it's for Lê Minh Quê. At 15, she'd run away to join the army, to fight you, she said. She'd never been this close to an American before. I was 19, I said. Once, she said, she'd spied on GIs bathing near Khe Sanh, needing to see them unshelled and human. But they were too far away. She couldn't see anything. You were ghosts to us too, I said. The helicopter scared her the most, she said. They came down. I know, I said, and thought of how differently each of us heard those three words, and then thought of her crouching under jungle canopy, the downward arc, the red flashes of my tracers, the strangeness of connection. 20 and more years before, I'd searched for her on the ground as she'd searched for me in the air, our eyes aching with the need to see each other. But I didn't see her beneath the canopy's weave, and she didn't see me in the stir of treetops, the light shivering like panic through the branches, until now, as simply as forgetting a dream, we looked and our faces emerged as if from leaves, as if from sky.
Wayne Carlin, poetry saves us. And I think to bless the program, you mentioned that you might read a poem by our mutual friend, Lucille Clifton, who was a great deal of sustenance for you.
Yeah, Lucille was a close friend for as long as I've known you, actually, Grace, for 40 years. I miss her greatly. I thought of this poem. She dedicated it to me, which I was honored about, but it has to do with this idea of letting the past go while still remembering it in a way that's necessary and significant. And it's called Enemies. It's about King David. Enemies, evening I creep into the tent of Saul. For his sake, I have learned the taste of blood in battle. I would drink his and he mine. We have become enemies. Yet here he is, an old man sleeping. Or my father, I will remove his ornaments. his armaments, his sword, his shield. Come morning, he will know himself naked but alive. And I will remember myself also, David, the poet David.
Enemies, enemies who have changed. Quay Mai, where are you in Vietnam right now?
So I'm in Saigon, or Ho Chi Minh City at the moment. I'm supposed to be in Washington, D.C. on my U.S. book tour for the paperback launch of my novel, Dust Child. But I'm here in Vietnam because my father is very sick. So he's in hospital right now. And
We will dedicate this program to his health, and all of our energy will be with him at his bedside because of you. What is the weather like in Vietnam today?
The weather is quite hot and humid at the moment. So it rained today, which is nice because, you know, the summer is really hot here. So on the way back from the hospital, I took, a motorbike taxi. So I could smell the air. I could be with the air. I could, have.
Oh, the poets have to smell the air for sure. Wayne, what's up in Leonardtown, Maryland?
It's had a gray, rainy, and cloudy today also. So we'll share that rain.
Yeah, but there's a lot of light going on. Quay, we are so honored. I want to tell everybody about you. You've had more than a dozen books, including in American and Vietnamese, including poetry, and dozens of American awards. I am so proud of you. But before I tell about them, let us hear two poems.
Thank you so much. So I mentioned about my father. He's a, my hero. He did so many things to make sure that my two brothers and I continue our schooling, because he moved us from North to South Vietnam for the only reason that we would have a better education. And I remember that, he was working every day from 4 o'clock in the morning until midnight. He did all types of jobs. And my brothers and I still talk about the moments when, during the years where it did not rain, he would carry water, in buckets on his shoulders to walk so far to water our rice field, to make sure the rice would grow and feed us so that we would continue to go to school. So maybe I can read a poem for him. I've written so many poems for my father, but maybe I can read one today, my father. Would you like to hear it? Maybe a little bit in Vietnamese first and then in English. Yeah.
We would be so honored.
Thank you. Cha tôi lên tàu mây nhòa tóc cha, tiếng còi tàu bật khóc. Dáng cha gầy gió chiều cứa buốt, nặng lăng những vòng quay chia ly. Tôi đi, bỏ lại sau lưng cánh đồng cằn khô lô xô nắng hàn, bàn tay cha ta chai sạn, rác mùa xanh trên những cánh đồng, dưới tấm lưng người là chuyện kể của những mùa thóc, lời nhọc nhằn thánh thót mồ hôi, là hy vọng thở từng ngày trong ngực. Đi được nửa đời người, tôi mới ngộ được ánh mắt cha, nụ cười cha và sự cả im lặng của cha hơn mọi gia tài. Tôi mới đọc được những điều cha nghĩ, nghe sau chiếc áo sờn bình dị, những yêu thương chảy nghẹn trái tim người, những yêu thương cha dành cho tôi, ngọt con sông mùa nắng khát. Tôi đứng trước cánh đồng ngày xưa cha gieo hạt, nghe đất mùa nao nức tình cha. My father, I board the train, clouds blur my father's hair. The train hooting bursts into tears. My father's fragile figure, the afternoon wind, cut into us, chilling heavily the turn of separation journeys. Behind me, the dry fields are uneven in the scorching sun. My father's hands hardened and scarred, sprinkling rain seasons to come on the fields. Under his back, stories of the seasons of rice harvest, the words of good work sing out with the sweat and hope he breathes every day. I have already spent nearly half of my life, but the only inheritance I understand is my father's gaze and his smile more than any other. I can only read his thoughts alive behind his simple faded shirt, love overflowing, choking his heart. The love he dedicates to me that sweetens the rivers in the scorching season. I stand before the field that my father sowed, listening to the new season rise under the earth.
To the new seasons rising under the earth, which is what you represent to us. It's so interesting. The father in literature is time honor tradition, but in American literature, it's a little more acrimonious. We have a lot to learn about respect and honor, and you help us a lot. Thank you so much. The Vietnamese language is so beautiful. I don't even need to hear the translation. Thank you. Wayne, I have known you for 40 years. Once you had black hair, I like you anyway. We know you are a Vietnam War vet. You have spent every hour since then for 50 years bringing Vietnamese writers and American writers together. And you've been building a bridge of peace like no one else in America. So you are the author of 8 novels. I have read every one of them. And now you have a book of poetry coming out. And so we want to hear something from it. What's the title going to be?
I don't have a book of poetry coming out. I have a novel coming out.
Wait a minute. You have 8 poems written, so right?
I have about, I've in the last year or so, I started turning to poetry.
Wait a minute. You have 8 poems. You only need 50 more, Wayne.
Yeah, I'm about 20, but you know,
we're going to hear about your novel next, but I want to hear you have written like I can't, but like a bird flies. Let's hear a poem.
Okay. For today, I mean, what I've chosen to read from have been these poems of reconciliation, of meeting folks from the other side. And they've been, you know, some of the poetry that I've been writing. This one is called Drinking with the Enemy. And it starts with an epigraph from old Hemingway. Abstract words such as glory, honor, courage, or hallow were obscene besides the concrete names of villages, the numbers of roads, the names of rivers, the numbers of regiments, and the dates. That's from A Farewell to Arms. I was the only American at the table. We were all veterans. Christmas evening in Hungai. In the war, one of the men said, "You bombed the church here." He laughed uproariously. "It still doesn't have a roof," he said. A red plastic Santa Claus and a green plastic Christmas tree stood in the lobby. We played a drinking game with glasses of beer. At the count of 3, everyone had to drain his glass. If he couldn't, he had to drink another glass. We drank to empty ourselves. A film run in reverse. The man sitting to my right smiled at me gently, tentatively. Like many who had been in the war, his teeth were bad, brown stained and broken. His skin was pitted and lined with the years we shared and didn't share. and he walked slightly hunched over like a farmer looking down at his earth, or like a man in a rice field crouching under the sound of my helicopter rotors. "Now," he asked me, "then where?" It was his only English word. He tapped his chest with the carapaced fingers of his farmer's hand, trying to dislodge the two questions we all asked each other and the two questions we didn't. When? Where? Did you try to kill me there? Did I try to kill you then? I took his hand and pushed it against my chest. "Quang Nam, Thuat Dien Wei, Quang Tri," I said. These are all provinces in Vietnam. He grabbed my other hand and pushed it against his chest. I could feel his heart beating hard through the skin of my palm. "Quang Tri, Quang Tri, Quang Tri," he said. One of the other veterans yelled, "What? Hi, bye, yo." We drained our glasses 10 times, 9 of them for the 9 years the man to my right was there longer than I. His eyes grew desperate. His farmer's hand was trembling. He pointed at his filled glass, pointed to his mouth, tapped his forehead hard with his blunt, calloused finger. "Quang Tri, Quang Tri, Quang Tri," he said, tapping violently to dislodge the seepage flowing with the beer into his brain, pushing heavily into the cavities of his heart. I took the glass of the man to my right from him, and I drank it for him, into myself, all of it, for him. It nested in my chest, an icy stone.
I could feel his heart. That's what that poem is about. And these words must be made permanent. This life you've lived, this community you've made, this has to be put on the page. This is the reason we live. It is the reason we live, to restore and to heal. This is going to be a beautiful book. Wayne, I'm really, really very, very touched, and I'm going to love this. I'm going to publish that book. So beautiful. Quay Mai, your first international publication of poetry was Hassan with Bruce Weigel, a mutual friend of ours. And I wondered how that worked. Did you write the Vietnamese and then you put it into English and then he worked with the English? I would be very interested in knowing about that collaboration.
Thank you so much, Grace. First, I'd like to speak a little bit about Wayne's poetry.
Please.
That poem was just so heartbreaking, but so beautiful and so healing. And I mean, during my years living and working in Hanoi, I translated for the reunions between former enemies. Just like Wayne described, I was there when the men who were opposite each other during the war were now drinking and talking and laughing with each other and crying with each other. It was so emotional. And when you brought it to the page so powerfully, and I want to see this poetry collection. And I want to say that Wayne is one of those veterans who have done so much to bring our two countries together. Wayne is one of the very few veterans who have been, dedicating so many years of his life to translating and editing and publishing Vietnamese literature. And I think literature really opens the pathway to healing and to reconciliation. And I think we can build such strong bridges of understanding, of compassion via literature. In my first novel in English, The Mountain Sing, there's this young girl who was being bombed by American airplanes, but whose grandmother brought home American literature. And he read, and she read it, and she fell in love with American people. And she was thinking to herself, if everyone was willing to read each other and see the light of other culture, there would be no war on earth. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that, all of us read each other, and especially politicians, before they decide to go on war, you know, to go to war. They must read literature from the people whom they're going to attack, you know. I think they would change their mind and try to find other ways, you know, other than violence. So Wen's poetry is so moving, and I want to see this book. Wen, you have written many poems, so keep writing. Yeah, and so one of the other veterans, you know, who has done so much for Vietnam is Bruce Weigel. So I met Bruce in Vietnam in the year 2010 when I was attending, you know, a conference, a literature conference between Vietnamese and American veterans. And I translated for that conference. And I was really moved by Bruce's poetry. Hmm. So I listened to his poetry during the conference. And I researched about it, and I went on and I translated. You know, I read all of his poetry collections, and I put together an anthology of the poems and essays which he had written about Vietnam, and translated it. And I had a book launch for him in Guangxi. Wen just wrote up the poem about, you know, the Battle of Guangxi, and where the veteran kept talking about Guangxi. This is the most bloody battlefield during the war in Vietnam. And Bruce, I took Bruce there to have, you know, a launch for his book. And it was so emotional. It was so heartbreaking. We had so many veterans who came to our reading. And we went to the cemetery where we burned incense for the dead soldiers, dead Vietnamese soldiers. And can you believe we went to a grave with two headstones. This was an area in the National Cemetery where there were many graves without any names. They were like, you know, unnamed, the graves of unnamed soldiers. So we came upon a grave with two gravestones. There were two families who claimed that grave to be their child. So, you know, that single grave had two gravestones. So it was really an incredible experience. So I translated his work first. And then Bruce asked me, why do you keep translating other people's poetry? How about your own? And at that time, I had been, you know, writing and publishing in Vietnamese. So I didn't think about translating my own work, because I wanted to translate, you know, poetry by veterans, to bring veterans together, to foster an understanding and empathy and reconciliation. But his question, you know, okay, gave me a thought, maybe I could translate my own poetry and ask him to help edit it. And so we worked together for years on this book, which is like, it's called The Secret of Hoa Sen. Mm-hmm. So it's like a selection of my poems, which I had written in Vietnamese and translated into English with his help. And then after we finished working on the translation, Bruce submitted it to BOA editions. They have the translation series. So luckily we won a grant to have this book published. So
and yeah, it won the Lannan Award, which is very competitive. So I was wondering about that, and it's a great story. Can you read us a bit of it?
Thank you. So, you know, when mentioned rice field in his poem, maybe I can read a poem about rice field or the significance of rice in the Vietnamese culture, or, you know, also in my own life. So this poem is from The Secret of Hoa Sen. The poem I can't yet name. My hands lift high a bowl of rice, the seeds harvested in the field when my grandmother was laid to rest. Each rice seed Hey, sweet as the sound of lullaby from the grandmother I never knew. I imagine her soft face as they laid her down into the earth, her clothes battered, her skin stuck to her bones. In the great hunger of 1945, my village was starved for graves to bury all the dead. Nobody could find my grandmother's grave, so my father tasted bitter rice for 65 years. After 65 years of searching, spirits of my ancestors led my father and I to my grandmother's grave. I heard my father call mum for the first time. The rice field behind his back trembled. My 2 feet cling to the mud. I listen to the burning incense of my grandmother's soul spread, joining the earth, taking root in the field where she quietly sings lullabies, calling the rice plants to blossom. Lifting the bowl of rice in my hands, I count every seed, each one glistening with the sweat of my ancestors, their backs bent in the rice fields, the fragrance of my grandmother's lullaby alive in each one. So this poem is dedicated to my grandmother who died in the great hunger of 1945 when Vietnam was colonized by both the French and the Japanese. And at that time, 3 million Vietnamese died, including three members of my own family, my grandmother, my uncle, and my great uncle.
The sweat of my ancestors, just those simple words. They are the memorial. This work must be known. It must be written. It must be cherished. It must be read. Quay Mai, we are so honored that you're sharing this. Now, Wayne, in his original poem with us, talked about an encounter with a former enemy. I wonder if you would mind just telling the story again very briefly, which is going to be rephrasing the poem. But 25 years ago, Wayne, you and I sat in the studios of WPFW with this person, I believe. And can you just quickly summarize that encounter from Vietnam where you nearly killed each other? And it must go down in history. It must be heard today again. The poem said it so lyrically. Now I want to hear it flat out.
Okay. And I think it ties in very much to what Quay Mai was talking about, that in that sense of needing to read each other, understand each other's stories, you know, not just understand the facts of people, but to really get into their souls with that kind of empathy. And that moment of meeting Lê Minh Quay, who was that woman, was really what led me to all of the work. You know, whatever work I've done in reconciliation, because
every day for 50 years, let me say.
Yeah. We were at a conference in University of Massachusetts in Boston, done by the Joyner Center, which brought together writers who had been on both sides of the war. And, you know, we would always ask each other those questions, where were you and when were you? Ascertain if we'd been at a place where we might have tried to kill each other. And Lê Minh Quay had not spoken about that until one morning. You know, we got to know each other at that point and had become friends, and we're sitting at a breakfast table, and I asked her, and she told me she had been working on the Ho Chi Minh Trail under this jungle canopy where it was at a place I know I had flown over that area, that general area. And when she said that, I remembered a fire mission were just told, shoot down into the trees. You know, I couldn't see a target, but they said, there's somebody down there, shoot. So, I shot. And of course, she was probably not there. But sitting at that breakfast table, kind of looking at her face, I had this real moment of grief. you know, that if she had been there, I would have killed her. And that image in the poem of the face coming out of the jungle, the human face coming out of the jungle, because if I had seen her on the ground, she would have been in a uniform. She would have been the uniform. She would have been enemy, not a human being. She would have been a target. If she'd seen me in my, you know, helmet and flak jacket with a machine gun, you know, I would have been enemy. I would have been a target. So it's that moment of seeing the human face that I had not been able to see all those years before. And the fact that we were both writers, you know, and we're dealing with, I mean, it brought me to this idea that we shared, that we really need to bring each other's stories.
And you brought her to America.
I wrote to America, and we did a collection of stories from the three sides of the war, the American side, the Vietnamese refugee side, and that side.
Plus many other anthologies.
Yeah, you know each other's humanity by knowing each other's stories, and when you know each other's humanity, as Quemoy said, it makes it harder to kill each other.
Oh wow. In 1973, you wrote Free Fire Zone, and then The Other Side of Heaven. And your anthologies. How many books altogether have you combined Vietnamese and American writers?
Whether
in translation or other?
Yeah, I mean, there were two main anthologies, but also another one called Love After War. But there are also about 12 novels and short story collections by Vietnamese writers that I was able to get published through Curbstone Press. He did a Voices from Vietnam series, which brought out the first anthology, The Other Side of Heaven. And then, you know, pretty much every year we were getting another Vietnamese writer translated and published in the United States.
How many times have you gone to Vietnam since?
Remember, probably about, seven, eight, nine.
And how many times have you brought Vietnamese writers to America? A dozen?
I didn't bring them. I brought Le Minh Quay and Hoang Thai, who were involved with that anthology, for a book tour we did for the anthology. Joyner Center has brought them. Dozens. Quay Mai was one of them.
Yeah, I just have to say that you are a hero. You are my hero. You have made something possible that was impossible before, Wayne. But we are now going to honor another part of you, another room in the house, which is your poetry. So please give us a poem.
This is... But after I read this, I'm going to ask Quemoy to read her poem about the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, if she would indulge us. This is about that, but I did a series of poems from the point of view of Odysseus, you know, the first guy who returned from a war that we know about. So this is Odysseus descends into the land of the dead, and I think you'll recognize the connection. Even here, the wall, everything before it missed, everything after it missed, everyone before it missed, everyone after it missed, the crenellated ridge bristling with spears and mocking faces, spun into myth by lying bards, into mist, the bisection of his life. He shakes the vision from his head. This is not the wall of Troy. It is the wall of Hades. The wall of the dead, it is black and smooth and mirrored and stretches to the horizon. It does not narrow to a point of perception. It continues circling the world, Ouroboros. It is a black band that presses against his eyes. It is a black mirror that swallows him as he draws closer. His reflection merciless, aged, scribbled over by the names carved in white letters into the black mirror of the wall. The names of the dead write themselves on his skin, across his forehead, his chest. The white names carve themselves into his skin. Their barbed letters rake his face like the nails of women, tangled together like discarded clothing on the deck of his ship, trench fires into his skin. Odysseus the cunning, destroyer of cities, offerings line the base of the wall, a dove with its throat cut, a pack of cigarettes, a bottle of beer, a gutted daughter, a pack of condoms, a pair of dog tags. The offerings fade, return as the dead themselves, draining into the dirt, their faces covered with rubber ponchos against sudden rain. It washes his skin, churns the earth at the base of the wall into red mud. The dead are all wearing his boots. His body strains against the need to step back, step away. He pushes against it forward as he would in battle. The corpses cave into themselves, into the earth, into dust that puffs up and settles in the creases on his face. He steps through the wall into the land of the dead. He will learn to fit himself, silent as moss, to the embrace of stone. He will learn to become moss, which is stone dreaming of life.
Which is moss dreaming of life. Stone dreaming of life, stone dreaming of lice. A dove with its throat cut, a dove with its throat cut. That is the tombstone for the Vietnam War. But, you know, your book is Odysseus in Vietnam, isn't it? That's what it is. Exactly. And Wayne, you said that Quay Mai had a companion poem that we could hear.
She would honor me with reading it.
Thank you. Thank you. I wrote this poem a long time ago when I first visited Washington, D.C. I think it must have been in 2008 when I first went to the States and I visited a friend, in Washington, D.C., together with my husband, who took me to the Vietnam War Memorial, but I refused to go in. I thought at that time, I had not become friends with any American veteran. I had not read much American veterans literature, and I did not see their humanity because of all the teachings I had been, receiving from my years growing up in Vietnam. So I told him I don't want to honor, the people who were in Vietnam who helped to contribute to the devastation that I grew up witnessing. So I stayed outside, was really angry. And then my husband went inside and he came out and he pulled my hand. He said, if you don't go in, you are going to regret it because I know you're very interested in history. And so I went in and my first feeling was that this war is not long enough because it should honor also the names of Vietnamese, Laotian and Cambodians who lost their lives in the war, right? Because they are like millions of people who lost their lives in the war, and this is not enough. And I felt really angry. And I when I look at the names, I saw, the image of Phan Thị Kim Phúc, who was burned by napalm. In this famous photo of Nick Wood, of this girl naked because she was burned by napalm and she was running. And I saw her running from the names and I was upset. And then I saw at the foot of the wall, I saw the letters that were written by relatives of the fallen soldiers. They had written to their loved ones. And I picked up one of those letters and it was from a man whose father had died in Vietnam. And the letter said, "Dad, today is my daughter's birthday. Why are you not here to blow the candle with her? I miss you. Why did you have to go to Vietnam? Why did you have to die?" And I stood there and I read a letter and I cried. It was my first time of seeing the humanity of of American soldiers. You know, it was my first time of thinking, of touching that humanity, of thinking about them beyond their army uniform, beyond their guns and the bombs and bullets, and seeing their faces and seeing the faces of their families, of their wives and of their children. So I was crying a lot. So that trip really changed me. From that trip, I researched and read literature by American veterans, and I translated. I, as a volunteer, I spent years translating literature of Vietnam veterans. And I wanted other Vietnamese people to see the humanity of American soldiers. So that trip really changed my life and my perspective about the war. So this is a poem I wrote about that time. Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Bird's song knocks on the White House. Lincoln's smile resounds. Sunset soaks Washington in deep red. The Black War, 58,267 names I don't know, who fire gunshots into my mind, their boot tips still drenched with blood. I want to bury them once more. Agent Orange flares up its color, and the burning Phan Thi Kim Phuc runs out from the rows of names. Black, silent, the silent answer for thousands of questions. A tiny rose lights up a sharp pain, a letter dim with tears that someone wrote for his dead father. I hear from the gloomy earth the sounds of American fathers carrying their babies in their arms, their eye sockets like bomb craters, their hearts bullet holes. Agent Orange lives in their bodies, their blood flows and drags their crying babies from their arms. Every name on the Black War sinks into my skin to become every face of the fallen Americans. Washington this afternoon, red sunset or tears.
Their hearts bullet holes. Quay Mai, your transformation is a symbol. It's something that you are going to place like a chip of crystal in each of our hearts that hear you, because your transformation is a symbol to the world that we can change, that we can accept, that we can believe. And I thank you so very much for that poem. I thank you so very much. I would like to talk about your novels as well, because you are absolutely at the top of your game in America. You have won dozens of awards. Your last book, I believe, was named the best book in 10 American newspapers. So let's talk about those a little bit. The Mountain Sings won, I think, 10 awards or something. Then Dust Child, as I say, was the best book in LA Times and every single newspaper in America. What makes this a bestseller? What are you doing? What are you saying?
Thank you so much, Grace. You're too nice to me. I wanted to add a Vietnamese perspective into the canon of literature in English about Vietnam, which is still dominated by non-Vietnamese voices. So Vietnamese, because so little Vietnamese literature has been translated, so we don't have many chances to present our own perspective perspective on not just the Vietnam War, but on Vietnam beyond the war, Vietnam as a country of more than 4,000 years of history and culture. So through my books, I present, you know, the Vietnamese stories and our heritage, our poetry, our love for our family, our love for nature, the healing that nature offers us. I just wanted to write some epic poems in the form of novels because I want to teach the readers
into
my poetry. So each of these books took me 7 years to write because I did not have a chance to learn English until I was, very late in high school. So to write English is a great challenge, but the bigger the challenge, the more you can learn, right? And Wen has helped me a lot with my learning as well. So the Mountain Sing is a story about a Vietnamese family and what happened to four generations of their family throughout, our long history. So from the French French colonization of Vietnam to the, Japanese occupation, to the Great Hunger, the land reform that devastated, broke apart many families, also the Vietnam War and the war's aftermath. Mm. So this is told, this novel is told via the viewpoints of a grandmother and a granddaughter because I wanted to talk about the impact of the war beyond the battlefield. I wanted to talk about the trauma which is inherited by family members who were bombed, when they were at home, who had to nurture, the injured family members when they return home, or who have to rebuild their lives when the family members are missing or have died. So, this is, very much a story about, the strength of women and how women can be the pillar of the Vietnamese society. Mm. And also the importance of nature and also the impact of the war beyond, the death and injury on the battlefield, because I talk about Agent Orange and the damage of Agent Orange on our nature, on our environment, and, and also generations of young Vietnamese who are born until today deformed by Agent Orange. This book has enabled me to have a big family because so many veterans have written to me, mm-hmm. And share with me their personal stories and pictures and their experiences during the war. And it's just very moving because I really think that literature can bring people together. And my novel, the second novel, Dust Child, is about another, often forgotten aspect of the war, which is, the mixed race children who were born out of the war. Before I researched for this book, I did not know that there were nearly 100,000 of mixed race children who were born out of relationship between American soldiers and Vietnamese women. And most of them, were abandoned by their parents during the war, and they grew up homeless, and they were very much discriminated by our society who called them children of the dust or bụi đời because they were homeless. They did not belong to, they did not have a family, so they were called children of the dust. And I wanted to show via this book that, these American children deserve our respect, our empathy, and who need our support in their search for their parents, because 10 of thousands of them are still looking for their parents with very little hope. So in this book, I also want to talk about, I want to document, the impact of war on the lives of young men and women, because there were like hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese women who had to serve American soldiers during the war. Because like American soldiers who were, you know, stationed in big cities like Da Nang or Saigon, they had the chance like to go to bars or go to brothels. And, you know, I mean, there were many cases where, you know, women were abused, sexually abused or taken advantage against. And, you know, I mean, you know, like the war really dehumanized Vietnamese women and also robbed us of the humanity. So I wanted to return the humanity to these women. I wanted to talk about their circumstances, the reasons why they had to work in these places, the reasons why many of them had become sex workers.
Comfort women, they were called.
Yeah, and also why they had to abandon their kids when they were pregnant. And so there were many heartbreaking stories, but also story of miracle, you know, like miracle reunions of mothers and children, or of fathers and children, and of former lovers. And I witnessed these because, you know, I've been working as a volunteer for many years, to help unite missing family members. So I witnessed incredible stories. So I also feature, you know, the voice of an American veteran who returns to Vietnam in today's world. And unknown to his wife, he had a child in Vietnam. And now being in Vietnam, he feels really guilty and he wants to search for his child.
We're going to make sure that so many people get an opportunity to read that book. Although it is a bestseller, we are going to make sure that it is more than known, because there is a beating heart under every line. Now I know why it is so popular. Now I know, after hearing your voice, what you have put under each line, a living pulse. So we will be looking for that book, and I'm going to further it as much as I can. And Wayne, I know that you have a new book, Genizal.
Geniza.
Okay, well, I don't speak Hebrew very well, being Italian, but Geniza. So I know, I looked it up in the dictionary, and I know what one is. What is your novel about?
It's a kind of reimagining of my family story. My family came from a small, my mother's side of the family came from a small town in Poland where the Jewish community was exterminated during the Second World War. And my speculation was to try to bring it home. I try to imagine what would have happened if my parents had not come to America, if they had not gotten out. So I actually just got the copy.
Oh, is that the first copy?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, I feel honored.
Was Khoi Mai's.
Khoi Mai make a comment on it?
Yes, she did.
Yes.
Can you read it to us?
Of
course it's praise, but let's hear it.
Yeah, heartbreaking, powerful, poetic, and innovative. This novel deserves its place on every bookshelf. Nguyen Phan Khoi Mai, international best-selling author of The Mountain Sing and Dust
Jump. Oh, two best-selling, two beautiful souls, two great writers on one program. This is a pinnacle moment. Now we must each have a final poem. And I'm going to ask Wayne to give us a final poem. And then our very, very beautiful new Nguyen Phan Khoi Mai. Wayne.
Thank you, Grace. I want to say also with Khoi Mai's last poem and the poem I read, that custom of leaving objects at the base of the Vietnam Memorial, it always struck me, because that's such a Vietnamese thing to have an altar where you leave everyday objects for the souls of the dead. And that somehow seemed transmuted here to me, you know, in looking at that wall. So I think for the last poem, if you'll indulge me, this is something I wrote for my dear wife Omar, and it's called "The Light Between the Words." And as you know, Grace Elmore passed away 4 years ago.
I do. And she was loved and beloved by everyone who knew her. Everyone.
Yeah. Her
life was also dedicated to helping people. As a social worker, as a caregiver, she was
absolutely
one in a million.
Yeah. The light between the words. Afterwards, he moved through the world, not as in a dream, but as a man imitating the movement of a man in a dream. He constructed a room from memory near a park in Belgrade, in Beograd, in the white city, white light dancing through yellowed gauze curtains as if through autumn leaves, light flickering like the light of memory, like the light in Jerusalem that blushed blood under the skin of ancient stone, like the skin of lovers, bruised by the heavy press of history, brushed by the kiss of time. He put himself back in the room, and he put her back, and lived in a loop run over and over, rewound, paused. He was afraid if he stopped it, it would burn. A spot of flame would flare in the center of the frame from the very place their bodies were joined, and widened swiftly in a fiery circle. And he felt that circle widen in his stomach and chest, like the burn of grief, the burn of absence. He was a man of words, but in that room they spoke in look and breath and touch, and didn't know which was echo and which was source. They spoke in the language of a country that no longer existed, and of a city in that country, and of a street in that city, and of a building in that street, and of a room in that building, and the words for the world were gone, and now he had to learn to search for her in the light between the words.
Wayne Carlin, if we stop telling the story, it will go away. Thank you for telling this story. And now, Nguyen Phan Quay Mai, a final poem.
Thank you so much, Grace. Before I read the poem, I want to thank our listeners. To anyone listening to us, thank you so much for your time. I'm honored to be spending this program with you. Thank you, Grace, for being such an amazing host. You listen to us really, really carefully with all your heart, and you captured the spirit of each poem with your beautiful comment. Thank you. Thank you, Wayne, for being such a wonderful conversation partner. I love your new novel, and I would encourage everyone to get a copy of this novel, because you know it deserves its place on everyone's bookshelf. Mm-hmm. And Wayne, we need your poetry book. And I want to thank Mike, who is our technician, who has been recording us, who makes this program possible. So I read a poem about my father, and I would like to end this poem about this program with a poem about my mom, who's my hero. Mm-hmm. Is my I've written a lot of poetry about her, because she's someone who works so hard, also who never ceases to believe in a better future, even though she lost her parents from a very young age. But she still is very hopeful, and she never ceases to believe in the goodness of people. My mother's rise. Through the eyes of my childhood, I watched my mother, who labored in a kitchen built from straw and mud. She lifted a pair of chopsticks and twirled sunlight into a pot of boiling rice. Mm-hmm. The perfume of a new harvest soaked her worn shirt as she bent and fed rice straws to the hungry flames. I wanted to come and help, but the child in me pulled myself into a dark corner where I could watch my mother's face teach beauty how to glow in hardship and how to sing the rice to cook with her sun-baked hands. That day in our kitchen, I saw how perfection was arranged by soot-blackened pans and pots, and by the bent back of my mother, so thin she would disappear if I wept or cried out. Thank you so much.
The voices of Nguyen Phan Quay Mai and Wayne Carlin, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress on remote. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation, the Sinipet Fund, the Anne Arundel Arts Council, and friends Avide Shoshani, Natalie Canavore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I am Grace Cavalieri.